On the cold black night of March 31st, 2007, my mother and I scrambled down the steep, rocky bank of the frozen Yalu River, which divides North Korea and China. There were patrols above us and below, and guards posted 100 yards on either side of us, manned by soldiers, ready to shoot anyone attempting to cross the border. We had no idea what would come next. I was 13 years old, but we were desperate to get to China, where there might be a chance to survive. The young North Korean smuggler who was guiding us across the border insisted we had to go that night. He had paid some guards to look the other way. I followed him in the darkness, but I was so unsteady that I had to scoot down the bank on my bottom, sending small avalanches of rocks crashing ahead of me. Our guide made a phone call to someone on the other side, the Chinese side, and then whispered, "Run."
Hi, I'm Todd Cranin for Reason TV. I'm here with Yunmi Park. She is the author of In Order to Live, A North Korean Girl's Journey to Freedom. Welcome to Reason TV. Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
You grew up, the time you grew up, the years, was a really historical moment in,
yes.
in North Korean history. Just following the collapse of the Soviet Union, it was famine widespread. And I was wondering, can you talk a little bit about that? Can you talk a little bit about what life in general was like in North Korea when you were growing up?
My life was kind of a roller coaster when there was time my father in a party so he could able to feed us properly, so I had 3 meals in a day. And there was a time where I didn't have much things to eat. But beyond that, the life in North Korea, seeing dead bodies on the streets and seeing hungry children on the streets, and that was very normal life for me. And I never thought that was weird or that was a sad thing.
And your father had a sort of a mid-level job in the government, officially. That was his official job?
He had a kind of, official job for a very short amount of time. But he could not be there because of his poor sangbun, which is social caste system. And he worked in the bottom and worked in the black market mostly.
What did he do in the black market to make ends meet?
In the beginning, he sold everything. He sold the cigarettes. So he bought the cigarette in the border area and then bring it to the inner the country so he could make a profit out of it.
And he was caught and arrested for this.
Yes.
How was he caught and what was his punishment? What happened to him?
We didn't know what his sentence was. We didn't know what his trial was. But in North Korea, the government just arrest them, torture them, and send them to prison. And the family member did not even get invited for the trial.
How long was he in prison?
He was sent to 1 year labor camp, and he went to labor camp for 10 years. So total like 11 years of sentence, and he served 3 years of.
And was that your motivation for leaving North Korea? Was that when you said, we gotta go, or when your family said
that? Yeah, I think it was the kind of biggest motivation, because once my father became prisoner, I was also marked as a criminal in that society, because my father's crime is my crime, and therefore my blood tainted in that society.
But you didn't know what's on the outside, right? You don't know what's outside North Korea, so how do you know it's going to be better in another country?
When I was in North Korea, I saw outside medias, and then I watched Chinese movies and saw Chinese advertisement. And there I saw fat kids. People were look big and they had lots of food and they have advertisement. In North Korea, we don't have advertisement for the people. We don't have anything to sell except the propaganda. And also, I live in the northern part of North Korea, so I could see the lights from Changbai, the China side. And I was always wondered what the lights, why we don't have lights in North Korea, but why China has lights. And I believe somehow if I go to China, then they might have enough food for me to eat.
it's interesting that advertising did it to you too as well.
Yeah. Right?
In the West, we kind of disregard advertising as having no value, right? No redeeming value. But to you, you actually say that it was an important.
To me, was because I could not believe something talks about rather than the regime and the propaganda. And I remember when I was young, I watched the advertisement about the milk. And I didn't know milk was coming from cow. I never had milk. So I wondered what that taste would be like. That liquid thing is white, not pure like water. So, what that it would be. And that was, I think to me, that was freedom. They were creatively trying to sell their products. And they can say anything about it. But in North Korea, everything was propaganda. So that advertisement to me something was a revolutionary thing.
And to you, freedom, the idea of freedom meant food.
I didn't know what freedom was. I didn't even know the word. I didn't know the concept. I never heard of the word freedom. To me was the happiest thing to me was having food. And when I was young, I never dreamed for being a president or prime minister. My dream was having one bucket of bread, and that's all I dreamed.
So can you tell us just briefly about the crossing over mountains and rivers?
So once my father got out from the sick leave, so he was very sick and he got out from the prison to get the treatment, and my family went really hungry. We ate frozen potatoes, grasshoppers, and we could not feed us in North Korea. So my sister left with her friend first, and my mother and I were trying to find her. But when we found the lady that my sister left a note that find this lady, and I went found her, and then I told her that I want to go to China too. And somehow, for some reason, she said, I can help you with that. Haesan is a border area, but if we cannot just cross anywhere because the border guard is watching us and they would shoot us. So we had to go to cross the mountain or like big hill. And then we went to cross the frozen river. And we bribed the border guards, but we didn't. The man who was helping us bribed the guards. But we cannot bribe every guard because 100 meters, guards, and the dog was like barking. So somebody who would shoot us from there. Even these guards bribed it, so it was very scary. I thought I was gonna be shot.
And it's not like once you get into China, everything is great, right? Everything is actually really hard once you get into China.
Yeah.
And once, I know you had a lot of hardships there, but once you get your bearings in China, then what do you do? Are groups typically helped by missionary groups or Christian groups? Or do the people, that's what I hear sometimes, or do the people of China come to your help? What happens once you get there and you realize you have to eat, you have to live?
I didn't know I was coming, and I was 13 years old. And when I got there, the first thing I saw was my mother raped. And the guy who took us to China was a human trafficker, and he tricked us. So when you arrived in China, the border Chinese, the Korean ethnic Chinese man was waiting for us. And then he was trying to rape me and my mother protected me from there. And then we found out that if we want to stay in China, we have to be sold. Unless then we can go back to North Korea. But that means if I go back to North Korea, I will be imprisoned or dying from the starvation or disease, so I could not go back.
And so how do you survive? And first of all, what is your goal? Where are you trying to go at this point?
I didn't escape for freedom. I didn't escape for anything like that. I escaped for a bottle of rice. North Korea is so hard, and you don't think too much. You just want to survive. And we just crossed the river. And when we got there, they say, if you want to live in China, you gotta be sold, and you have to get married to a Chinese farmer. And if you don't want, you can go back. But I know I'm gonna die if I'm going back to North Korea. So my mother also being sold for a farmer, and her price was $65 at the beginning, and I was also sold for $26. and we were both separated from that moment.
But at some point you decided to cross into, to make it to Mongolia, to Chukotka, Mongolia.
Yeah, after 2 years of living in China, hiding, and that during that time, the man who bought me, he offered me a deal that if I become his mistress, he would bring my mother and he would bring my father from North Korea. So I accepted the deal from him. So I became his mistress and my father came to China, but he had a untreated colon cancer, so he passed away. So I had to bury his ashes in the middle of the mountain. And then after 2 years, the man who bought me, for some reason, he let me go. So my mother and I was free. And then we met Chinese missionaries, the Christian missionaries in China. And they told us how we can go to South Korea.
And all this time, do you still hope? You don't know where your sister is.
No, I didn't know.
Do you still have hope that you may reunite with her, that you may find her?
Yeah, I was still looking for her. And I was still hoping where she would be.
You crossed through the Gobi Desert?
Yeah.
Tell us about that a little bit.
It was 2009, and somebody told me, if you go to South Korea, you will be free. You can wear jeans, which I'm wearing today. You can dye your hair, and you can watch movies without getting arrested. And I thought, wow, that is great. That's so cool. To me, that was freedom. Not the freedom of expression, freedom of speech that we are talking about in this country. And then five people in our team, we walked and crossed the Gobi Desert in the freezing winter night. And we followed the compass, and then later we could not use compass, so we followed the stars north until freedom.
So for those of us who have never been to the Gobi Desert, which is almost all of us, just paint a little picture. What is the Gobi Desert like when you're not just going there as a tourist, when you're actually going there to survive?
So I heard about desert. There's lots of sand is going to be there. And the moment I stood on the desert, nothing. Just nothing. Sand, just straight. And it's endless, endless space. And I felt only the stars were with me. And I felt this even earth, this universe abandoned us.
And where were you even headed in the Gobi Desert?
They told us if we had a compass, so if you go to north and like west, between north and west, follow there. And if you go straight, 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 and if you cross the aid or something like wire fences, that will be Mongolian territory. Then you have to find the Mongolian soldiers or Mongolian people and tell them you want to go to South Korea, you are from North Korea. So we were crossing the wire fences and we were crawling and walking and running. But it was 2009 and it was end of February or beginning of March. So it was freezing cold.
And you did reach the border at one point, and you did
get arrested.
The guard, you got arrested essentially.
Yeah.
And so how do you deal with that?
Yeah, when I arrested, the guard was reaching gun like him, pointing at me, put your hands up, put your hands up. And I was so thankful because I met somebody in the desert. I said, thank you, I was speaking Chinese, say. And they're like, no, you are gonna go to China. And we were like surprised because we thought if we go to Mongolia, they will save us. But they were saying they will send us back to China and then go to North Korea. So we had like begging them and we told them, if you send us back, we will kill ourselves. Because we were ready to kill ourselves. We brought the lasers, we brought poisons, and we were ready to kill ourselves if we are going to be sent back to North Korea. And they didn't send us back and they put us in a kind of prison, kind of some camp for several months, and then we flew to South Korea.
This is your first taste of a wealthy country, and I'm wondering what is your first experience of that? What do you think of that?
Everything was shining. Everything was shining. And I went to the bathroom, and I couldn't believe because they had a toilet paper, and it had like flower print on it. And the smell was so good. So I thought, I don't want to use that for that purpose. It's so fancy. Yeah. And I stored a little bit with me. And I just could not believe because people were wearing the girls, like young girls wearing like a mini skirt. They are having like a small thing with their hands, which is cell phone. And everybody was so fancy.
Just like the advertisements that you
yes.
watched. It was when you saw it, it was like, this is like television that I remember.
DVDs or maybe fancier than that.
Really?
Because I didn't think that was real what I saw in TV. Because in North Korea, everything on TV is lying. So I thought also maybe in the West, on TV, lots of things lie. Not the real life is not going to be like that. Uh-huh. In the real life, people not going to have a notebook, people not going to have a car, you know. Only in TV, people are having it, like North Korea. But here, reality was like a TV.
How were you able to reunite with your sister?
More than a year ago, she came to South Korea. And then she found us at the NSC, the National Intelligence Center.
What is that? What is the National Intelligence Center?
They investigate you if you are a spy or not. And then because they have to check every your background, and I registered who's my sister, who's my father, where I did grow up, and my sister did the same thing, and they like saw, oh, this matches. And do you have your mother name is this, your sister name is this? And they contacted us.
And what was that day like when you saw your sister again?
I had no idea there. And I got a phone call from my mother and she was crying. And your sister's here, but there was lots of times people were tricked us and they asked us money for that. And I thought it was another thing like that. So I didn't trust her, like, what do you mean? My sister's here and she was, this time's real. I was just screaming. I just could not believe that it was really happening.
So a couple of years ago, I interviewed another famous North Korean mm-hmm. defector by the name of Shin Dong-hyuk, who mm-hmm. you know, who is a friend of yours.
Yes.
Well, I was born in a political prison camp in North Korea. I was expected to just do manual labor and to work. And I had no concept, I had no rights, I had no concept of what human rights were. I was destined to live and die in this prison camp.
The North Korean government came after him and really hard. They tried to discredit everything he said. Mm-hmm. They tried to humiliate him mm-hmm. And embarrass him nationally. And I'm wondering, are you prepared for that? You say that the North Korean government has come after you a little bit.
Oh, they came after me more than that.
Yeah. Tell me about that.
I have told my story many times, and I was not perfect, and I was hiding a secret. For the first time, I wrote down this whole story that I was trafficked. I was raped at the age of 13. And it was very hard for me as a girl who I have dream. I want to be a normal someday. I want to have family. I want to have baby. That's my dream. But I thought if I admit what had happened to me, I thought nobody was going to see me as a normal person. Especially in Asia tradition, the purity, virginity as a woman is everything. And to me, I thought if I reveal that, it's gonna be the end of the world. I will forever lose chance to be normal again. So I was hiding my secret entirely. But North Korean government came after me and they discredited me that I didn't suffer in North Korea. And also they said my father died in North Korea, not in China. And they say my mother, I was a very ambitious girl because in North Korea, being ambitious is extremely bad thing. And they say you're an ambitious girl and your father was a bad person and your mom was an immoral person.
As you can see, both Park and her mother have admitted that they have no idea what they're talking about the human rights situation in North Korea. This clearly proves that their scripts are written by the US and its followers.
But they didn't really come up with like a big thing except my father died in North Korea. Mm. And my father's ashes were in China and my mother went to China a few months ago and she brought my father's ashes to South Korea. So basically our whole family, four of us in freedom now. So I'm very totally ready for it. And my story is like I'm talking about the executions and the government not letting people to see outside the media, and the starvation. It's not I'm only testifying it. There are hundreds of North Korean people say the same thing, and we can see that from the satellites. There is concentration camp. There is starvation, and the North Korean regime is the really, they really oppress people. And that's what this regime against me, they say I'm the puppet of CIA. I'm the human propaganda puppet. And I think last week I spoke at the United Nations in Geneva, and the North Korean diplomats were there too. And I told my story in front of all over the world. And they also say I'm fake because the West trained me to be this way. So I don't know how much we should give credit to this evil regime. I don't know how much that is worth pay our attention to pay for that. And I admit that I was not perfect. And my English, as you can see, is my third language. It's not even my first language. Yeah. So sometimes the journalists unintentionally misunderstand me. And they write down something, they write down say, different dates, and it's out of my control. Because I'm not the one who's writing the article. So I think I'm afraid that inevitably I might make the mistake in the future with my language barrier. But I know that the truth about North Korea, the oppression and their tragedy, it cannot be silenced.
There's no doubt about that, that it cannot be silenced. Mm-hmm. And you make a very good point. So the question is then why have, like Mr. Shin and a few others, they have embellished their stories. It's absolutely true that they suffered terribly, that, for example, Mr. Shin did grow up in a concentration camp,
right.
But it wasn't the one that he said it was, and some of the things in his life weren't as bad as he said he were, that they were. Why, if things are already that bad, and
right.
I believe they are, why embellish? Why do some defectors do that?
I don't know. To me, the reality is already bad. I cannot even describe what life is in North Korea. It's undescribable. It's unimaginable. There is no way I can even tell you how different the North Korea is. It's a different universe. It's a different planet. I cannot even tell you the reality, the truth. How can I come up with something different? And I don't know what other people's story, because they might have reasons. Like myself, I had a reason to hide my secret. I didn't want to admit I was raped when I was 13 years old. I don't know their reason, but I only know my reason why that had happened to me. And so, yeah, but it's very sad situation.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
I speculate that sometimes I think some people are understandably angry at North Korea, and they want to make it even worse, to make it seem even worse than it is, if that's possible.
Yeah, because my case is like I have lots of witnesses. If you have read my book, we have all the recordings that my co-author, who worked with me and who went to South Korea with me, and who met all the ladies who escaped together with me,
yeah.
And also my friend Young Ja, who I met in South Korea, who I grew up with together, who made the paper dolls with me. And because of that, there's no way my story can be verified in every way. And we already have lots of recordings from that and the witnesses there.
I often learn that when North Korean defectors move to Seoul or South Korea, they're not actually treated well by South Koreans. And that's fascinating to me too, and I don't understand why that is.
I remember the very first day when I got out from the resettlement center. So there's a resettlement in South Korea, and they teach us what is ATM machine, what's bank, what's credit card, what's election is. And I remember they taught us how to charge money in the transportation card. And I thought money goes into that card, and then where's money? Money disappeared.
Right.
I thought it's magic.
Yeah, I'm kind of like that way with my laundry machine.
Right.
It's the same kind of thing.
Yeah, so that's how I learned. And of course, I didn't know what was like A4 paper is. I don't know what copy machine is. I don't know what Americano is. So I didn't know even like a computer, like 5 years baby. I knew like less than the babies.
Yeah.
But in South Korean society, they view as us, like, in a general sense, like less than them. And they see us like we are less educated. And we don't have a good understanding of capitalism and democracy. And also we are from communism country, we are the government telling us what to do, and we don't really think for ourselves, and we don't work hard, therefore. So these kind of stereotypes against the people from communism background were there. And it was extremely hard for me because I wanted to start a new life. But before even I start, they were telling me you are a loser already. You are stupid, you are dumb, you are not gonna be succeed in this society. So that's why I was holding into the books, that the books only told me that I can do.
I would think that anyone who can survive in the North Korean black market would actually be a very good entrepreneur and have the kind of skills that would allow you to succeed in a capitalist world. Is that true?
That is debatable. Yes, because I did a black market business too when I was 11 years old. I sold the persimmons in the market, but I don't have any entrepreneur idea here.
Really? I see. I'm surprised to hear that because you're a kind of a media personality and a media star. You're on television a lot in South Korea, or you have been. You certainly have a big social media presence. You're a good salesperson.
I am not.
Yeah,
so I think I'm sure in North Korea also people have to find on their way to survive. Mm-hmm. And that is driving North Korea, this young generation evolving in this unique way. They finally started thinking for themselves in North Korea, which were not allowed in North Korea because the government providing them food. But the people now, they don't need the food from the government. And this kind of gives them some freedom, independence from the government, and people can think for themselves finally. And this trading gives them this opportunity to learn about the capitalism and trading. And so I'm very positive and very optimistic that these young people in North Korea, they will thrive and more, and they will bring the change in their country.
What do you think about Americans and people from the West visiting North Korea as tourists? This is happening more and more now.
As a North Korean defector, to me, and I was not elite when I was North Korean, I was now sitting in the bands, going to a restaurant, you know, have a McDonald's or having a pizza, right? I was starving and eating the dragonflies, eating the plants, and that was my life. And I remember how my father tortured. And my father died without knowing even this kind of democracy exists in the world. He didn't even know this much food was available in the world. And if I had things that Americans throw away, I would never escape from North Korea. That's how much we were desperate. And I was raped when I was 13 years because I was born in North Korea. I have nothing done wrong in the world. My crime was just being born in North Korea. And so many people going through this now. And to me personally, when the people pay money and go there and they believe any kind of exchange is great, and this will help the people inside North Korea. And to me, it's like you are going to see the part that only governments want you to see, right? It's kind of you are visiting Kim Jong-un's yard and see, I saw North Korea. So some people, they misunderstand North Korea and they say, I saw amazing things, people happy there, they have lots of food. But some people, they learn the oppression and they see how much freedom is not there. They see the suffering from people and they raise more awareness once they go to North Korea. So I don't think this is black and white issue.
The name of the book is In Order to Live, A North Korean Girl's Journey to Freedom. I've been here talking with Yoonmi Park. Thanks for talking.
Thank you. I'm so honored.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm Todd Cranin for Reason TV.